was just amazing, the fruit that happened when we just said, you know, this time Sunday, this time Wednesday, we're together. And we did meals, we did life, we laughed, we cried, everything, all of the above, for an extended period of time. And what we learned from that was just that you don't have to know lots of families, but just to be intentional and growing with at least a few, it makes a huge difference.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
All right. Well, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast. I'm Jeremy, and I am joined today with Seth Spading. And Seth, I'd love for you to take a minute and just introduce yourself, your family team, a little bit about what you guys are up to. And I'm really excited to dive into some of the things that God's been leading you guys through as a family.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's great to be here. Really honored and excited to just have the opportunity to share. So I'll introduce the Spading family team. So my wife is Christine, and we are proud family father and wife to four kids. So our oldest two are actually twins, age 13, Ethan and Noah. And then it is Elijah 6 and Adeline 4.
Nice. So three boys and then a girl.
Three boys and a girl. She is well protected.
That's awesome. Those two 13-year-old twins. That's awesome, man. So just by way of background, so Seth, you and I met at a Family Teams weekend. I think it was, and you guys came out, I think at the time you were living in Oklahoma and you were in the process of transitioning. Maybe give a little background of how we connected, and I'd like to kind of go back and walk through a little bit of your fatherhood journey.
Yeah, we can highlight that, and we might have to back up to get to that point too. But we drove to the Family Teams weekend in Cincinnati and didn't think too much of the travel or anything, and arrived there and we were met by all Cincinnati folk, and that was great. And we were a 12-hour drive, but everything worked out great. And really, we had been introduced to that through a Storyform Life study with Heath Hostetler. And I know Heath's a close a friend and contact of yours. Heath Hostetler was the executive director for Cooks and Hills Children's Ministry in Oklahoma, a place that we were working and serving at. And so we had just become friends with Heath, had done small group discipleship study with him. And he had mentioned this weekend opportunity to learn about family teams. And there we were with you and Stephen Mowry and Rich Tile and a couple other families. And we just kind of walked away from that, just completely floored and kind of shook us up and had a lot to unpack from that time.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I'm excited to get into that a little bit too. Obviously I want to go back and get your whole journey, but for those of you guys listening, so the Family Teams weekend, what Seth participated in, we did some smaller, maybe 4 or 5 weekends here in Cincinnati over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, and got to really dial into maybe 30 or 40 couples at a time. And it was super cool. I know that for those of you guys who are coming to the one in Cincinnati, or this may be released around the time, actually, I think of that weekend, it's going to be a lot bigger. And so we're getting to get this out to a lot more people. So I'm excited for that. But Seth and Christine were part of the kind of the earlier iteration. And so I'm really pumped to hear how that impacted you guys. But yeah, take me back, Seth, a little bit. Just I'd love to hear your background. How did you begin to think about fatherhood? Like what was that made up of for you? What was your journey like? Any major milestones that you would like be able to share with us about your journey would be really helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I think I stepped into fatherhood without thinking too much of it. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, my wife and I mean, we married you know, fairly young, probably by today's standards. We were in college, actually just prior to our senior year of school. And so, you know, we were, you know, married, then we went out and found great positions. And then, you know, had our first, which would be Elijah, at age six, now, but, we didn't really think anything of that transition. So for me, that was really, just kind of happened to me. And so I was still living the same life I was living before, you know, we had our first, and so I didn't really process through a transition and all that of what took place, I guess, as you enter into fatherhood. So can't say I thought too much intentionally of that transition, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so from there, I know you guys, yeah, talk to me a little bit about how that was impacted, or yeah, how that developed for you.
Well, so when you start out that way, I think that, you know, there tends to, the conflict kind of starts to happen, right? Because I'm still living my own narrative. My wife is living her own narrative. And now we have this child, and we don't know exactly what to make of all that. And it feels a little bit like you're getting pulled away from the things that you're interested in doing. And so you don't really embrace it so much as it just happens to you. And I mean, it's just small things, you know, that, I don't have any interest now, but at the time it was just, you know, getting together with other guys, you know, doing things like fantasy football, you know, just going out on the weekend, and it just kind of creates a collision. And so without any intentionality, you're all of a sudden, so that's me. And then Christine kind of had her things. And so we didn't have a foundation, that was really guiding and shaping us as to what this major transition that was actually taking place, that was happening.
Mm. So you guys were sort of experiencing, I guess that sounds like a pretty typical story where you're like, okay, we're going to have kids, we're going to, you know, build a family. And then things like, how would you describe, like, was that working for you? What did that break down at some point? Like how did you guys, kind of work through, that season and then like transition us to, I know that, you guys worked, the decision to move to Oklahoma, which was a huge deal.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and how did that work? And, you know, I would say it didn't really. And so, you know, despite us having, I guess, if you will, a lot of the elements of the quote unquote American dream, you know, we had our first child. We had a home. We were living in South Minneapolis, had a great position at a major Fortune 100 company in the Twin Cities. And, you know, from the outside looking in, we should have been reaching the pinnacle. According to kind of our life and standards. And the problem was really, one of the problems was that, you know, my identity was in the wrong places, I felt like. So I was really shaken up anytime maybe a week didn't go well at work, or, you know, I wasn't meeting my expectations, you know, throwing a child into the mix, that didn't help the matters because our foundation was not solid. And, you know, I want to reiterate, I don't feel like any of those individual activities are wrong. You know, the ability to do well work or step into a corporate position or, you know, even, you know, our home ownership and we were very involved in the church. And I mean, each one of those things can be wonderful and great things. But to us, we were looking to them to provide the contentment. We didn't have it, you know, really foundationally. And so as a result, I just kind of went to and fro and was bounced to and fro and I needed, you know, something to take place. And that kind of reached a bit of a breaking point, I guess, in where we were at.
Hmm. So I think a lot of people experience that. And it's kind of surprising, like you get what you're aiming at and it doesn't feel like it's fulfilling the promise. That's sort of like right. A new stabilizing moment, right? Yeah. And so, but a lot of people, it's like, what do you do in that situation? Like, how did you guys process that? And then, I know that, you know, you started looking at making other decisions, like walk us through, like, yeah, how are you working through that? How are you interpreting having achieved what you were aiming at, feeling the sense that it wasn't actually fulfilling what you guys thought it would. And then like, yeah, how did you guys respond to that?
Yeah. So it took a couple of rounds for sure. And this is abbreviated, but I mean, you know, my first thought was, we weren't taking enough breaks. We needed to do a little vacation, or we needed to spend some more time out. And so that was kind of the initial go-to. So we set aside some time on, you know, to go out for the evening, find a childcare and went out. But I think because that was our thought that was what we needed, that night was particularly kind of memorable as just being awful. So there we were, just my wife and I at this hotel that we had arranged for the evening, and I was miserable. I was up all night. I was just restless, completely restless. And so, and realizing like, this wasn't actually the solution.
Yeah.
And silly as it sounds. And so we kind of regrouped from that. And we each took another day off to reflect, and we did some individual prayer, individual journal, and like, okay, Lord, what do you want for our lives? And that second round brought us to the decision to move and work at this children's home in Oklahoma.
Yeah. How did you guys come to that conclusion?
Yep. So we had had, I guess, a couple of missionaries that had come through the church we were involved in, kind of planted that seed. We had a pretty impactful moment with the scripture from Isaiah 6:8. The Lord said to me, "Who will go? Send me." And so, you know, we each had that scripture kind of divinely, if you will, brought to our attention in our personal prayer time. And then as we were looking for employment opportunities, we had all these children's homes up on our browser, probably looking at 10 different places. And this spot in Oklahoma had the same verse. And I just looked at Christine and I said, all right, let's just go with that one. And we did. So 3 weeks later, our house was on the market. We both resigned from our work positions, and we were moving south.
Wow. So there was a real... I mean, was this the sense of like, man, this isn't working. We need to like make a, because that's such a huge change. Yeah. How do you process that even now, like thinking back and making that adjustment? Do you think sometimes people just need to like, there's a moment where some people are just like, you've got to like make kind of almost a 180 in order to see your life sort of start to head into a different trajectory?
I do think there's a time and place for that. Certainly it doesn't need, I don't know that it needs to be that extreme for everyone. I felt like for us, we really just needed to kind of dismiss some of the idols in our life and just allow our hands to be more open and to just say, Lord, what is it in your life that we need and you can work with us? And for us, I at the time, I needed to step away from, you know, this corporate position that I was gathering a lot of identity in. We needed to step out of just the identity we'd place in ourselves and small group leaders. And not that those activities are wrong, but when you view them as fulfilling your identity. So we needed that 180, as you said. And so it just brought us to a point of almost brokenness and a point of just hands open and too willing to listen and serve. And so I don't know how much we had to offer the children's home so much as we were just available and ready to serve. And it was definitely a two-way process more than anything of things we learned and unpacked as we arrived there.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's often how it works when you're dealing with a real idol, or like you say, I like the way you're talking about something you're placing your identity in that could make it really difficult for the Lord to lead you in the future. And so to really found your identity in Him. So a lot of times you do hear these, like where if you find yourself in a situation where you're really wrestling with that, sometimes God just calls you for a season to completely give it up. And oftentimes when He asks you to do that, it's like, you know, you don't know if you're going to get it back. You know, some people just, I think I remember reading about Keith Green. I was just watching an interview of him. When he first came to faith, he gave up music, I think, for a season and didn't, okay. You know, like, you take things that you built your identity on and the Lord just like, I want that for at least a while. You know, there's a time where you can give back because a lot of these things that we're stewarding are really good. Like they're things that God put into us and wants us to bless the world with. But if we have placed our identity in them, sometimes the best way to completely reset that kind of pattern or the way that our identity is sort of functioning is just to sort of open our hands and let it go and then trust the Lord, you know. And man, that's such a huge, you guys were, you know, where you wanted to be, and then it's like let's sell our house, quit our jobs, and serve the Lord by becoming parents of a children's home in Oklahoma. So that's such a man. So walk us through just like, how are you guys feeling? Like what was going on like in your family and between you and Christine, and just as you guys made this transition from Minneapolis down to Oklahoma?
Yeah, so it was a significant change, certainly. And so there was all range of emotion and nervousness, of course. And yet there was a piece about it. And, you know, my wife really challenged and reminded me of the importance of just documenting all of the kind of milestones that had led us to that decision so that we could fall back on them when, it seemed like maybe for a shorter season during our time later on that if something was difficult, we could look back to. So that was helpful. It was just a combination of, excitement, nervousness. We were ready for a change. And as you kind of said there earlier, that it was like a playground for us to really kind of build our foundation. And so, there we were, the two of us, my wife and I, and at the time, our only son, Elijah, 6 months, ready to just be part of the children's ministry home. And it was very much like we were ready to learn and grow in whatever the Lord would bring our way.
Mm, yeah. So yeah, share a little bit about what Cooks and Hills is. So I know that it has kind of a bit of a unique strategy where I know it's Heath actually spent time there as a child and then he's now the executive director right now in the midst of transitioning out, but spent years serving in that capacity. And so, yeah, talk a little bit about what life was like for you guys. What was that ministry and what was kind of a day in the life of being a parent over one of those children's homes?
Yeah. So, I mean, the focus was being available to care for the kids. Each home had up to 10 children. And so, of course, after the training and everything, then you would kind of have children added into your home. So the facility itself is, on 1,000 acres, and they have multiple different homes and a school on site and a equine therapy and a community dining hall. So really trying to create a safe place for kids from difficult backgrounds. So for us personally, it was bringing Elijah into one of those homes. And then we would just kind of have children added in. And then with each child, you learn their background. And so that was really eye-opening. And just to the depth of really the sin and chaos and fall of this world that we live in that's impacting all these children's lives. That did a number of things that actually reminded me and my wife too as well, just how stable our upbringing was. And so that we really felt like we weren't able to give or serve because of what we could do in the moment, but because of, the foundation with which we were given. And so we were actually kind of reminded of that because it contrasted so sharply with these kids that were being brought in, and the Lord's timing and everything was incredible looking back too. But the first two kids came in with a group, and those two boys, Ethan and Noah, years later we were able to adopt and become part of our permanent family. So certainly the Lord had an amazing timing and everything, and so that's my twin boys. So definitely just kind of like we were there, we were available, and the Lord put them in our path. But that kind of gives you, I think, a view of what it was like to be there.
Man.
Hey guys, did you know we have another podcast called 5 Minute Fatherhood? In it, Jeremy and I take 5 minutes every day to bring you a quick tip or piece of wisdom that will help equip and encourage you on your journey as a father living in God's design as the coach of your family team. Find it or listen and subscribe by searching 5 Minute Fatherhood on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere else podcasts are at.
So you guys were there, they're adding, you have this big house that you're sort of on 1,000 acres. You have you, Christine, Elijah, and then one by one, up to 10 children, people are added to your home. That's like fatherhood/motherhood boot camp, man.
Exactly. I know. Well, looking back, it's just like crazy because we've had kids from every age group. You know, we've had high school teenage girls, we've had middle school teenage girls, we've had middle school boys. I mean, so like at this point, every age is like accounted for, you know, and so it was like crazy to get that kind of like, boom, here it is, you know, fatherhood training, like boot camp, like you said.
Yeah. Wow. So then you guys decided, what was it? You know, a couple years later that you decided to adopt Ethan and Noah, or how did that sort of transition occur?
Yeah. So, and that's interesting too, because I wouldn't say most of the profile of the kids are such that that's going to become a possibility. But as we immediately had kind of learned their story, just realizing that that could be a potential opportunity, I just looked at my wife and said, well, we moved to Oklahoma for an undefined period of time, but we're going to be here as long as it takes because these two boys are, you know, at the time, you know, six and 7 years old and scheduled to be there a long time. And so we're just, you know, the Lord just put it on our heart that that was going to be a possibility. And so we just, you know, made it that we were going to be there as long as it takes. So, you know, April 2017 on National Sibling Day, as it turns out, April 10th, that became a permanent happening. So it just over time, and we were, you know, that option became available.
That's good, man. When you guys, so it cooks in a lot of times, it's a temporary,
right.
And the hope is that the child will be reintroduced to their natural family, and but in this case that wasn't a possibility, so you guys had to really decide, is this what we're called to do? And man, so you made the decision. Like, tell me a little bit about, just as in your father's heart, you have Elijah and now you have these two older boys that have been introduced into your household, and now you've decided to adopt them. Like, walk me through a little bit what's going on in your heart towards them, towards these twins, and how you know, you and Christine work through that emotionally, just making the decision to say, hey, we want to be, you know, your mom and dad, and how that is going for you guys.
Well, it just happened, really. I mean, one of the you know, benefits with, I guess, being at in the children's home was it was kind of like the norm to call your house parents mom and dad. I mean, not in all cases, but for that was kind of just the environment. So they just kind of grew right into that, mom, dad. And so that language became part of the normal conversation. And we were also blessed that we were receiving visits, even though we were from far away from, you know, my parents, from my wife's parents. We would have opportunities when there were gaps around holidays to make some travel, even with our family there. And so really we were just able year over year to kind of allow the tradition of Christmas and some of those holidays for them to see what a different story looks like. And so they were able to see part of our broader family too. And so when it, honestly, Jeremy, when it came to the National Sibling Day, it was just kind of like signing a paper. I mean, it felt like we were already there.
Wow. So your heart is already, you already sort of became their dad. You really felt that responsibility. You had sort of let them into your heart in that way. And adopting them legally was sort of just the legal process at that point. You guys were already there in your heart.
Yeah, the Lord was really gracious in that process, for sure. And lining that all up to, it didn't obviously happen that simply, but for it to just go that way in the right timing, it worked really well.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tell me a little bit. So as you were there at Cookson, I know that, you know, encountering Keith, as you guys started to think about family differently, you kind of have now created the opportunity to really rethink foundationally what you guys were about, having moved and made this really dramatic transition. And so, yeah, what were some of the milestones in terms of our ideas that you guys were being exposed to, or things that really started to shape the way that you see family differently? Walk me through a little bit of that.
Yeah. So Heath invited us to attend Storyform Life at his home. It was just the four of us, more of just kind of getting the concepts week to week. And, you know, right when he had arrived, we were at Cookson Hills actually before Heath was there. And right as he arrived, you know, Christine would just kind of be really curious about getting to know him more. He seemed very much like he had something to tell that wasn't immediately, you know, couldn't just be told in a quick conversation. And so we were just like, hey, we really want to see what this is all about. You know, Christine, I guess, initially even picked up on that more than myself. And so it was just the way he approached, you know, being, you know, a little bit guarded with it, well, guarded with his family time and with protecting his family and raising his kids. And so we were just really intrigued. And then we had the opportunity to sit down and go through the Storyform life, which I hadn't done. And go walking from creation to recreation and deconstructing all these belief systems, like this American dream that had plagued me in the South Minneapolis position, and just replacing all that with a much grander story, you know, how we are in God's kingdom and seeking him in that. Mm-hmm. So that, I guess, I say Storyform life first. I know you asked about how it impacted the family, but I feel like that just created this broader foundation. Yeah. At which I could make sense of my role as a dad and my role of leading my family.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And for those of you guys who aren't familiar with Storyform Life, it's a course that we developed really to try to have that broader conversation. Because like Seth is saying, what I realized about myself and in my own disciple making of people here in Cincinnati, you don't start with family. The gospel is what's important, and choosing to follow Jesus is what's important. And oftentimes if people get excited about family, they may just replace whatever idol maybe they're struggling with that as an idol. Like, you have to give up your life and follow Jesus. Like, that's the gospel, to really receive his love and forgiveness and to give up your life and make him Lord. And so the Storyform Life really kind of walks through the story of the gospel from creation to recreation, and then gives people an opportunity to really lay their entire life on that foundation, that I'm inside of God's story. This is about his kingdom, not my kingdom. And this is about Jesus as Lord and following him and being his disciple and making disciples. And so that's kind of the context. And so you guys went through that, which is awesome, by the way. I just want to encourage people too, that if you want to check it out, you know, there's a bunch of online SFLs going on right now with my friend Steven and others that are leading those, so that you guys can go through that. Because I just want people to have a tool to really share the gospel and create that fresh foundation for people that they are wanting to disciple. And Heath and Cindy were an amazing facilitators for
incredible. Yeah. Just amazing to learn from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're so good. So you guys went through that, and that kind of like, okay, this is the gospel, and we want to be living in God's story and in his kingdom and his lordship. And so that was the foundation. That take us from there in terms of like the ripple effects that started having on your understanding of family.
Yeah. So one of the concepts from Storyform Life that really transitioned to family was this content of this character, Brad Johnson, and then Yitzhak. And so what that was contrasting basically a 13-year-old in today's culture, the Brad Johnson, who his identity was wrapped up in sports and his peer-to-peer relationships. You know, his greatest goals were like maybe getting an Xbox or, you know, just very here in the near term. And then contrasting that with the 13-year-old, you know, from, let's say, a Jewish culture, who has a deep multi-generational roots, and their greatest hope is like expanding their family and property. And so as I looked at those two stories, like, honestly, the first time I heard that, Jeremy, that example, like, it really, really kind of hurt at first, because I was like, I was relating to Brad. Just relating to how he, you know, kind of gets his identity from sports and these different things. And so I was frustrated by it, frustrated enough that I let it hurt for a couple of days. And then I came back and I wanted to know, like, how do I build my family in a way that's like this deep multi-generational roots and like actually cares about building the family and like expanding that impact. And so that really got me interested in this family teams concept, and just started to deepen our training in the family team story.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I had such a hard time figuring out how to communicate I had this really dramatic experience in Israel, you know, where I saw these multi-generational families and began to understand the way they saw the world. And I was shocked, like you said, I mean, like, right. Brad Johnson was like, yes, that character is how I, you know, is sort of biographical, like the same way you said. And so when I first wrote that, I was just trying to like, yeah, there are such different ways to view the world. And it's difficult to like, to understand what this Yitzhak, which is this, you know, this 13-year-old Jewish, first century Jewish boy, how he sees the world differently. So, and by the way, if you guys want to read that, we just published Family Revision, which is a book that that I wrote that you can grab on Amazon that has that story in there. But we often use it in the story form life as well. There's a week called The Adoption where we're trying to figure out how do you help people understand what a son was from the perspective of when the New Testament says that we are all sons of God and what it means to be adopted into his family. The Western people tend to think about a typical sort of Western child relationship with a father. And that's not what I don't think first century people thought at all. They really had such a different view of family as this multi-generational thing that it was just an epic thing to be adopted into a family like that. The expectations go way beyond like, oh, you'll be my parents and raise me until I'm 18. And, you know, thanks for the, you know, roof over my head and food and comfort and care and some love. And, you know, we're building something. We're building this multi-generational. And so when God says, I'm adopting you into my family, it's not the way we think. It's the way that first century Jewish families thought, which was this, you're now a part of this thing that's been going on for thousands of years. And you're now going to get all the resources of the family, all the inheritance of the family. Plus you're going to start to bear the responsibilities of the family and the identity of being a part of this amazing family of God. And so we use all of that really to try to create people, really help people understand their spiritual identity in Christ, what it means when it says in Galatians that we're all firstborn sons of God, whether we're male or female, Greek or Jew. And that's an amazing thing. And then alongside of that, it's like, by the way, this is also the way God designed family in general. Yes. Right. And so you guys are, you know, and so now you're encountering the spiritual truth, but you're also encountering the like, hey, I'm a father and I'm raising a family. And this is a totally different way to see family. So yeah. Well, take us from there. How did you guys transition from there and start to, what are some of the next milestones that you guys encountered?
Yeah. So, I mean, just as you said, I mean, the roots of that story really just pointed to deep understanding of my identity in Christ. And that led to wanting to lead a strong family and just that whole, you know, understanding of just being a part of God's family really renewed my focus in being a father. And so that led to a lot of things that led to, you know, we used in our family kind of the coaching model that I was the head coach. My wife is the assistant coach. You know, my oldest two boys are very competitive. They're very athletic. And so they related pretty well to that. And so we used that as a kind of an analogy or a tool. And just also that, you know, that allowed us to do like a huddle before something or just to, you know, pregame and postgame and what are the wins. And so kind of just built that coaching language into our role as a family. And I mean, we also started a mission statement for our family, you know, and we have them in business, you know, but we often don't have them in families. And so I was familiar with how to write a mission statement from a business standpoint, but I had never done it for my family. Mm-hmm. And so we spent some time putting that together, took a few, you know, reiterations year over year and where it sits today. And I love just sharing this and even hearing my children share it too. But what we've kind of settled on for our family mission statement is, you know, hearts connected, eyes set on Jesus, arms reaching out.
Hmm. Oh, that's so good. I love it. So you guys, so these three concepts are really what encapsulate what you guys feel like. Okay, this is how God's designed our family. Hearts connected, eyes set on Jesus, arms reaching out. That's really good. So yeah, so now you've got these tools. You've got a statement, you've got an identity like as a coach. And by the way, one of the things we talk about, you know, like what Seth's describing in terms of being a coach, I had this epiphany that if Abraham were suddenly like to time warp into our day, I think that he would relate the way he lived, how he thought about life and the activities of his life more with a coach than a modern dad. Because coaches have all the tools that a coach has in terms of building up the team, working with the group as a team, working with each individual player, you know, having a clear set of goals, going out there to accomplish them, celebrating together, all those things that you see a great coach doing in our culture, and they're very revered. These are not activities that are normal for dads to do in our culture, right? Most dads don't have, you know, those kinds of times with their children. They don't treat their family like a team. They don't know what scoring looks like. They don't have a clear mission. And so it's not a perfect analogy, but I think it's the closest thing culturally we have to the way the Bible describes the role of a father. So as you guys, any other, like when you say, so as you're starting to coach your kids, you mentioned how does that work day to day, or like any other details in terms of how you guys play that out, and try to live into coaches of your team?
Yeah. I mean, I think about how, you know, if a football team is calling up a play, they're, you know, the quarterback's going to get the play call, and then he communicates to the team and the team runs the play. And so, you know, what I try to relate that to is, it's my job as the head coach to, you know, to call the play. And, you know, depending on this exact scenario of who's available in the space, I'm going to relay that play, and then you have to execute on the play. So it's just a lot of that team language, building that in, and, you know, just having that huddle, you know, before we do something, right? So, you know, if we're driving home from an event and we've got a family coming over for dinner and we've got, you know, a half hour to get ready, you know, it's my job during that time on the way there to call the plays and what everybody's going to do. And so we then we're going to, you know, evaluate too and celebrate, you know, as we win. So it's a language for us, and you know, it doesn't always, we've worked with other families on sharing that. And one family, you know, said, "Oh, we don't do sports, but you know, let me translate that to like directing a play." And so, yeah, go for it. You know, change the language. It's fine.
That's right. Very similar. Yes. Yeah. And I wasn't super sporty, but I mean, it's like we see these roles of coaches. Sometimes we see them as teachers or directors of a play. Yeah. But that kind of those typical things they do, how they group people up, make clear what their role is. This is what I expect from you. We're about to go into this thing. This is what success looks like. Come on, let's do this, guys. You know, and then when somebody's, you know, really not doing their part, the answer isn't always to go to them and say, like, you know, you need to work on yourself. Part of the answer is you're letting our team down. Like we are working together, you know, and we need, like, there's a very different kind of, thing that a child experiences when they sense they're a part of a team. And you'll see this, the contrast blows my mind. Like, you know, a lot of people have had this experience with their kids where their kids will be super selfish at home, just really rude to them as parents, really mean to their siblings, really self-centered. They'll literally get in the car, drive to the little league practice, and their child will just suddenly be like respectful to the coach,
right?
like really sensitive to the teammates, really striving to really score with the team, you know, really wrapped up in the success of the team, really like grieving the failure of the team. Then they get in the car, drive home, they become that selfish, you know, like rude, disconnected child. And this is the kind of thing that just drives me crazy. It's like, man, like this is the problem. It's not, the problem isn't always with them, right? Yeah. They're disconnected. They're selfish. But all of our tools are then go to them as an individual and then try to somehow like get them to snap out of it. And it's like part of the problem is they don't know they're on a team. Nobody's treating this like a team. They don't have a coach. They don't know what it means to score. They don't realize that their behavior is impact and that the game that the family is playing is so much more important than what you just did when you hit the ball out of the park. You know, a few hours ago. So yeah, that, but it's difficult, and you know, you have to make that transition and really start using that language and really begin to but that mission, and as you guys have really leaned into this mission, because I think for a lot of people, you know, trying to draw a connection between, you know, your heart's connected, eyes set on Jesus, arms reaching out. Like, talk to me a little bit about how do you try to connect the mission with either activities, you know, projects, ongoing callings or assignments, any way in which you've seen or drawn that connection for you guys, for your team, with the mission that you feel like you've been given?
Yeah, I think the mission is important to always consider, because as everyone experiences in life, we're constantly bombarded with activities and possible events. And if we're not ahead of the game on how we design our time, we end up just doing things we frankly may not have been interested in doing. And so we use the mission statement to always reflect on how we set up our weekly rhythms, what types of how we're going to spend our time. And so, you know, hearts connected. I mean, we've got to be together. We've got to be doing things that, you know, either we can all participate in, or the majority of us can participate in, others can at least be part of in some way. You know, our eyes set on Jesus. I mean, we've got to, we're always going to be doing things that matter and are for the eternal. And arms reaching out, it's a matter of, you know, making our home available to others, thinking of how we can serve others. And so those are just three pillars. I mean, we just constantly bounce those against anything that comes through the pipeline to either Christine or I that we want to decide on whether our family is involved in.
Awesome. And one of those things, and you guys have started to try to lean into, is intentional living with another family. So I'd love to hear about that, because that's I can see how. How as you guys left Cookson, where you had like all these other families that were, you know, kind of on the same mission.
Yeah.
Now you guys are in Minneapolis again. Talk to me about what you guys are trying to do there.
Yeah. So we did get a flavor of that, particularly in our last season and last year there in Oklahoma. We really intentionally lived with a family, not in their home or anything. We just intentionally set aside basically Sundays and Wednesdays. We were always together at different times. And so we just made that a rhythm for like a full year. And it was just amazing the fruit that happened when we just said, you know, this time Sunday, this time Wednesday, we're together. And we did meals, we did life, we laughed, we cried. Everything, all of the above, for an extended period of time. And what we learned from that was just that you don't have to know lots of families, but just to be intentional and growing with at least a few, it makes a huge difference. So we're now in a new season. We've moved from Oklahoma, and we're just starting to get a rhythm like that going again. And just how can we integrate intentional living in our own family now, even in the season and space we're at now?
So Sunday afternoons and Wednesday evenings. Talk to me a little bit about what you guys do during those times with this other family.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference in just getting together on like a one-time occasion is just that it was always established. We always knew the time. We'd come over and, you know, the first thing you do is just start to figure out what the dinner plan is going to be. You're prepping together. You're getting dinner plans going. You're maybe arriving at slightly different times if you're, you know, depending on, you know, on the Wednesday one in particular, depending on when work finishes or whatever, but you're starting to gather, you're starting to assemble, and then you have a meal together. You sit down, you share, you talk about the week, you talk about life, you are engaging, you know, with one another. After dinner, you know, the kids played together. You know, we got into, you know, some board games we really enjoyed. We played those, you know, consistently. Just more than anything, it was just a tradition, ritual of, you know, you didn't have to ask during the week if it was going to happen. It just was. And yeah, it was just part of a tradition of. And I think that so much of the body of Christ and doing life and church together is it's not like just a weekly corporate gathering. I mean, it was daily, you know, and that's really hard to replicate in our culture. But anything we could do to get to closer to that point, I think, is a huge value in our understanding and knowledge of Christ and growing in our faith.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think that a lot of times there's this language around doing life together, but then that often means, yeah, some program or small group, and it doesn't really involve the sort of the whole families and the normal stuff of life. And I think that what you guys are, you know, working on is syncing up just basic rhythms and time periods. Like, we're going to do dinner, we're going to prep together. I love that because I think, you know, so many people think about hosting something as I have to have everything thought out and do all the work and all the cleanup, and I'm exhausted, and maybe I can do that once a month if I've got a lot of bandwidth. Whereas if you just flip the script a little bit and say, no, like you might buy the food and then they buy the food once a week, but no, we could prep together. We can cook together. That's a bonus. Like that's not a bug. That's a feature, you know, like that's good. Then we get to eat together. Then we get to like clean together, which is again, a good thing. It's good to, when you're trying to do life with people, do normal things together and really right. notice how and bond over those things. And sometimes hard things happen. Like, hey, I feel like, you know, we're not really working, you know, as hard as we should. And, you know, you can be having those conversations and it's just like week after week, having those synced up rhythms that create a really a bonded, integrated life with those that you really want to be close with. And that you really feel like in the body of Christ, you need to be close with. And so, yeah, that's awesome. You guys are investing in that and not just leaving that behind, you know, when it was all facilitated for you down in Oklahoma. So that's really right. cool. Talk to me a little bit more just in general about your guys's, you know, you mentioned your rhythms. What is that about? Like how you guys thought about rhythms and how is that working for you guys?
Yeah. Rhythms are so helpful just because we are able to set aside what each day of the week, you know, means, or not quite every day, but several of them. Mm-hmm. And just to have some consistency there. And I believe that that's really powerful to do that. You know, so there's a night each week that, you know, is a date night. There's a, you know, we do a special dinner on Friday night, and that just kind of sets our rest in motion. And we are currently watching the Avengers series with our oldest two boys, which is like a 23 week series. Yes. So that'll probably take like, you know, half the year. So, just to really, you know, have something designated for each week. And then we've got, you know, a night where we have family. We are intentional about having a family come over for dinner. So yeah, we just have a rhythm there, and that just helps the week so much just to have that ahead of time.
Hmm. Oh, that's good.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father's skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed, but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we wanted to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
So you guys have crafted your weekly rhythm. You're starting to live into it. And one of the reasons, you guys, that we are so big in crafting a 7-day rhythm like this, like Seth and Christine have in their family, it's like it allows you to, first of all, balance all the different activities that you need to put in there. Like, when are you going to connect with, you know, your hearts, and like be intentional with those things? When are you going to rest? You know, when are you going to have fun? You know, if you're going to have a movie night, when are you going to do that? Like, and as you start to do that, you start to have all those elements. You know, when are you going to study the Bible together, and you know, all those things. And so you really get that going. And then over time, the other incredible advantage into really having a crafted 7-day rhythm is that then you can constantly be tweaking it and getting better and better. And because all the events in your rhythm repeat, little changes make a huge difference. Right. Like, you might notice, oh, like we should decide in advance what series we're going to watch, or we're going to you know, when we clean up, let's, you know, let's design a little bit of a strategy for how to do that, because, you know, or this night of the week, we tend to be burnt out, or this night of the week, we tend to have energy, or this seems to be the thing. And like, man, the first few months when you're doing rhythm, it may feel like a lot of sort of scheduling and not a lot of fruit, but man, like 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, it gets crazy. What happens when you are constantly improving things that repeat, because you start solving problems, and once you solve them, they're solved. And then it's like amazing. So I'm a huge evangelist for this just way of designing, because I think that so many families are burnt out, especially when they got a bunch of little kids, and for them not to be intentional with their rhythm means that they're just perpetually living in the survival mode, which, you know, has to happen sometimes, but man, not perpetually. That'll be really hard to be fruitful. Now you talked a little bit about, believing in your children and some of the ways in which you've like thought about each one. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that. How has that, been working for you guys and your family?
Well, yeah, I think with being so much more intentional about being a father, you know, to my family, I think that comes right alongside with it is identifying what each of the strengths of your children are. And you know, one of the things that we're seeing right now, which is really exciting, is, you know, our youngest two, Elijah, who's six now, and then Adeline, who, by the way, we added Adeline while we were in Oklahoma. Mm. So she's four now. But they've actually kind of taken over this kitchen chore of doing the dishes. And it's crazy to me. And I kudos to Christine for actually setting this up at the home. But they just like jump up. They both stand on the same chair. They've got this whole system. They soak them. They move them over to rinse and dry. And I mean, it takes like an hour. But what greater activity for your 4 and 6 year old than to wash all your dishes?
Yes. Oh my gosh, so, that's awesome.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's super, super fun to see them do that.
So Christine trained them to do that, and
she did. Yeah, I mean, she's got, you know, a little more time during the day to for that training, but she just got them going, and they love it.
Wow, they love it.
I think, you know, how many times do we just not give our children opportunities to succeed?
Yeah.
We just don't believe they can do what they can do.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I kind of think of the kitchen as almost being like the, you think about it, there's games and there's practice or drills, or the kitchens are so perfect for training, because everything repeats. There's endless things to do. It's so much blesses the family team when your kids start helping in the kitchen. I mean, your capacity just goes through the roof when you can predictably know that they'll clean up with a good attitude, what you can host, what you can do. That's awesome. 6 and 4.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah. So what else have you guys found in terms of trying to?
Yeah, well, you know, my oldest two, I mean, what's really exciting for them, you know, they're growing and I don't like to say teenager. I like to say young adult, because that's really what they're adapting to, being a young adult. But I've, my like friends, in business, my friends, you know, in the area, I mean, they've just like tapped into their ability to do a variety of different things. So, I mean, this summer, I mean, they were busy lawn mowing. They were, you know, working at a store, just as like a kind of a cashier role. And I mean, they've done everything from deer meat to, you know, working at a canoe rental. I mean, they've helped with childcare. I mean, they just like, you know, people actually need help with all that, all of the above. Yeah. And I just feel like I have that ability and like to not only have them help my family, but also other families and businesses too. And so they're constantly being asked and they love it. And, you know, and some people think of that as they're out doing all these things and they should just be sitting on the couch watching a movie. And I'm like, I don't really think they even want that.
No.
I know that they don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. So your vision sounds like for your boys is like, I want them to be creating value, contributing,
yes,
even at this age, at 13, like how can they contribute and how have you found those opportunities? So it sounds like even with other families, you're looking around seeing what other families need and then you sort of deploy Ethan and Noah. Is that how that works? Like, talk to me maybe one more layer deeper about how you're doing this.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously our heart is our family, you know, first in establishing all of the goals within our own family. But we've also just realized we've been blessed through a lot of the Bible studies and different families we have over for dinner and people we've gotten to know in the area. I mean, they're all interested too in getting support. And so You know, a lot of those, you know, what I mentioned earlier, I mean, a lot of that is just family businesses nearby that they've been able to help. And so, yeah, I think you said it. I mean, we want them to be adding value. You know, my oldest Noah, he's currently working with one of our neighbors on, you know, getting our brake pads, you know, installed on our vehicle, and working with a neighbor mechanic on that. And so it's just, I just love for them to learn and be a part of that. And there's such a void in our culture of just families having kids. And so that as a result, they just become incredibly valuable. Mm.
What would you say to a dad who's listening to this saying, oh my gosh, I got a 13-year-old boy and I could never get him to do that? Like, what do you think is behind that?
Here's the irony of what happens often, because I get that a lot. And, you know, usually they'll say something like, well, I could never get him to stop playing video games, or, you know, I can't get him off his cell phone to do that. And you know, my first reaction is always, why does he have video games? Why does he have a cell phone?
Yeah, right.
and so, I mean, that's one way to handle it. And, you know, I actually got the same question. I was, I also do basketball officiating, and was in something I bring my boys with too on the weekends. And we were at a Saturday tournament one time. I just was pretty much tied up in calling games for about 4 hours. And my boys had, just as we had gotten in, it's gotten set up and had offered to help with the concessions and with the volunteer there. And I mean, they were busy for like 4 hours, and I came out and the director came up to me and she asked basically the same question you just asked me. It's like, how did you get your boys to help this whole time? And I looked around the gymnasium, and I saw the exact same thing. I saw all these kids just playing on their video games, cell phones, sitting in the bleachers. And I just said, well, they don't have any of those devices. And I don't know if I should have shared something more spiritual with her, but I felt like that was the first thing that came to mind.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a huge deal. I think a lot of fathers don't realize that it is your responsibility, and you are choosing to allow portals into your house, like things that your kids are doing that can possibly compete with other opportunities. And so, man, be really careful with what you, because you know, the thing that you have to, what you're really dealing with there is these devices are really, really entertaining. I mean, they have billions and billions of dollars to try to get people addicted. And so kids, it's just not a fair fight. Like, kids aren't going to be able to, you know, just suddenly and spiritually become like, you know, I would just really like to serve for 4 hours instead of play on my phone. It's like, what kid is going to want to do that? Like, and so we feel like, well, if it's so entertaining, then maybe that's okay. It's like, whoa. Like, it's, again, you have to have a vision first. Like, you have to decide, is our vision, you know, there's a company in Silicon Valley that would love to set the vision for your family. And it's going to have to do with endless consumption and entertainment, because it's going to be what gives them money. So it's like, we're just sort of like opening our houses and saying, yep, yeah, that father, their vision is going to be how my kids are. And it takes a lot of intentionality. It's hard, of course, when all your kids' friends are sort of enjoying these things and you're like, oh, I feel like such a jerk, you know? and this is part of where I love your mission statement starts with hearts connected. Because I think what I've discovered is that when you start to do things that are really different than your kids' friends or than the culture, what you're really leaning on oftentimes is that your children's trust in you as a father and saying, hey, I have a different vision. I want us to live into a different story. If your hearts are connected, your kids actually there's a part of them that really wants to do that. Like, I really do. And you want to get them, especially before they oftentimes get into becoming teenagers. Like, it's really important to have their heart every single year, but especially getting into a place where they're going to start to feel more independent, and that they're going to maybe see, you know, that those entertainment kind of options around them. It's like, it's a big deal to have their heart. But yeah, I don't know if you have any other thoughts about that, because I think that's a constant tension.
Yeah. So, and I want one win on that that I is great to see with them is they actually can recognize that too amongst their peers. And just that if you go into a coffee shop and, you know, there's a group of like three or four middle school age kids just sitting there on their phones or their devices, they're like not even talking to each other or communicating. Even Elijah, he was, you know, we were at the grocery store and it was next to another, you know, family in there. They probably 5, 6, or 7 year old, and didn't Elijah like try to say hello to this other, you know, child and try to like communicate. And he was just watching a video. And so like even him, I was able to have a conversation with him and just say, you know, try to process through that together. So, but they're able to pick up on it. And they are to the point where they're kind of frustrated.
They're getting annoyed too.
Right. They're getting annoyed by it as well. Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Yeah. I've seen that with our kids in social media. Man, they're like, my daughter Sydney is 15. She's going to public school this year. We gave her a phone. The way we do this is we basically approve an app at a time. And there's very few okay. apps on her phone. But we want to be able to communicate with her a lot. And she's pretty responsible. But she's intentionally said, I do not want to be on social media. Like, at her age with the girls, what happens? And I've been really blessed and surprised about how solid she's been. And I think that it's hard to figure out where those boundaries are. And every family's got to kind of figure this out. And part of why I always want to get into the details on these kinds of things is because, man, technology is changing so fast. Like, we really need to update each other. Like, what are you doing? How are you doing this? Like, what are you saying yes to? What are you saying no to? And having very limited access to devices or on-demand entertainment, especially before, I would say all the way up to about 15, that's when we start to kind of train our kids how to handle this stuff. And it's like, we start to sort of drip it out a little at a time and then have these conversations. But by then, to your point, they've gotten so annoyed by some of the other, you know, like that's a huge advantage. Like when they didn't have their phone, when they didn't get social media in seventh grade with a lot of their friends or something. And then they kind of got frustrated maybe, but then they started to see what it was doing. You know, by the time they're a little more mature and then you start to have these conversations and then you start to like have it, you know, give them some freedom. They oftentimes will say no to things themselves because now they've seen and been frustrated. And they their values are more aligned with the families and they're kind of coming to the same conclusion that you are. Cause of course you don't want your kids when they're 17, 18 right. and they do get a lot of freedom to really, they've made all these decisions just out of sheer submission. Like they need to see the right. why and they need to get the why. And then they need to like make their decide if they're aligned with that. And so I love that. I think that's really important.
And I think when they see the why, I think they also appreciate the limits that are being set.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially with girls right now, the explosion of anxiety and depression that girls have, I think that seems directly caused, certainly correlated, but it seems like there's a direct causation between that and the way that social media is sort of really attacking their identities. Man, it's really heartbreaking what's happening because they see people, you know, presenting themselves in a certain way and the constant looking for affirmation and the likes and the, oh man, it's brutal on a girl right. in middle school. I think it's just toxic. All right. So that's awesome. So really seeing what each of your kids are into, and teasing that out. So tell us a little bit about where you guys are headed from here. So you've moved from Oklahoma. Now you're back in Minneapolis. You're pursuing some stuff. Like what's next for the Spading family?
Yeah. So when we moved back, you know, I think we were really focused on just wanting to be, you know, anchored in our family. And so we made an intentional decision to be, you know, close to both sides of our family. And so that for us, that's kind of, we live in Wisconsin and our parents are both in Minnesota. It's right on that border there. And, we, you know, wanted to, you know, just get, that was really number one. And people would ask me, you know, what are you doing for work? What are you doing for career? And, you know, I always believed that would work itself out, because I was anchoring on family and felt that call. And so, looking back, the transition wasn't quite what I expected, but it all worked pretty amazingly well. You know, despite my initial plans, I ended up actually taking a position as a school principal, for a local school. which is its whole crazy story. But my wife basically reacted to that after a few weeks in that role. And she just observed that I didn't have the stresses at work that I did when I was, in a corporate type position previously. And so we were just blessed to feel like at this point we were really anchored, within what God had for us. Mm-hmm. So we took that position at the school. We were renting in town, and we were okay with that. And it was kind of where we needed to be for the moment to just kind of get settled near family. But it wasn't exactly where we wanted in the long term. And my wife being a little bit more of the kind of the seeing ahead in the future, she really started pushing on this idea of moving out and having some land and having some space. And, and so our best vision of, I think, of what that was going to be was maybe like we would find another family we could rent from. And I couldn't figure out how within our resources, this was all going to work out. And really kind of a miracle, about 6 months, I was recruited by a, financial advising firm. I had some background in that, and so I had the right designations and such. And so they were like on board with my family mission too. And so they basically kind of agreed that if I had, transitioned from the school to them, that they'd help with what was needed on the income side to get this home built. And so it was just like this crazy miracle of just all that happening. And then we were buying land and having space, and we had 5 acres and we were moving out to build this home. And I was listening to these podcasts, and I listened to Andrew Peters' podcast a number of times about just the home and the space and the importance of that. And so we started planning our home.
Oh, that's awesome. So you guys are in the process of, so have you bought, or are you looking for, how are you thinking about that next step in terms of building a house and getting land?
Yeah, well, so it actually happened. I mean, it was incredibly fast. So what happened was we bought land last December. We figured out all the process for contracting, and we ended up buying like a modular home. And we did it all this summer. I mean, so it was crazy. Okay, nice. So it was like the busiest 2 months of – it was literally like the busiest 2 months of our life, and incredibly stressful at times. But it was so just this grueling 2 month season, and we did it. I mean, and so the last 2 weeks we've had this, we're now in this home and we have this space, and we're just beginning to experience the fruit of that.
Oh, that's awesome. And what do you anticipate when you think about what, as you look around your property now and think about your family and just what is your sort of vision or thoughts about what this will facilitate for you guys?
Yeah. And I think that we want to give our children the opportunity to be nearby. I mean, we want to, have, the acreage on both sides of where we're at, and there's a 40 acres behind us that it could be a potential spot. And so it kind of ties all the way back to Yitzhak in that, what is my greatest vision? I mean, it's like, I want to increase the property space and just have an opportunity for the family to potentially be close by. We also built that home, with a lower level that has a full kitchen. It has a full living space. It has a separate walkout. So the space is there for ministry, for potentially family, if there's a need, for other families to rent. We actually already have another family living there with us. That's been an amazing win-win, for both of us. So just as we look ahead, it's like, we're kind of like declaring the Spading family is getting started in that area.
That's awesome. I love it. It's right at the stage you guys are at is when I discover like where you, kind of the ages of your kids. This is really when oftentimes the Lord opens a door for you to root in a property or land, or your space. It doesn't have to always be in the country. It could be in the city, but basically what the place, the house, that's going to facilitate the generational sort of vision. And we moved I don't know how many times, 7 or 8 times. And then right around the same stage you guys are in is when the Lord really opened the door. And I had before that I had thought previous houses that I was at was sort of the place we might kind of root down, but I just don't think we were ready yet. I wasn't wise enough. I didn't really see the vision. I don't think our family was really ready. And then about 8 years ago, we got into the house we're in now, and which is, much more of a it's just so clear that this is the prior's house. You know, this is the place that reflects the vision
awesome.
God's given us. And so some dads are listening to this. If you're not in that stage, like, I love that you guys went back, you rented, like, you know, you have to know what season your family's in. Sometimes you're in a season where it's like, no, this is not the final place where we're setting in all the roots. We're still sort of stepping stones on the way to where that is. Don't be impatient with that process. But man, when it's ready, oftentimes you get this sort of flood of activity and clarity. And when that happens, it's such a huge thing. And I've seen that happen to so many families after, you know, three or four stepping stones, and then bam, the Lord's like, all right, you get it. Your family needs it. Like, here's the space. So that's awesome. Do you guys have any other wins or thoughts about where you guys are currently at that might be helpful to chat about before we're done here, Seth?
Yeah. And I think just, you know, it was a busy time with the move, and we just tried to use it as, again, just that family team language, the huddle. You know, there were times we could see our kids picking up on the language, and, you know, times that, you know, Elijah one time told us that we were all busy day, and getting to the end of the day and needing to stack all this wood, and Elijah looks around and says, you know, Dad, such a great thing. We have such a big team. Mm. You know, imagine if we only had one or two people on our team. This would be so hard.
That's awesome.
And you know, so just it was just fun to hear him pick up on that language. Yes. So yeah, I mean, I think the wins now is, you know, we've got that space, we've got the home, we're living with another family, and I think as we look ahead, we are just seeing how we can have this impact broaden and just, you know, have a missional community and figure out, you know, I don't know what that exact demographic, you know, looks like, but you know, just to reach out and have a focus group, if it's young families or young adults, or, you know, maybe it's a single mom's, you know, opportunity, you know, just to use our space, to use our impact, to continue to reach out to other families, and, you know, so that's kind of what's next. And the wins are just that we're starting to see that concept of family team in each of our children. And, you know, as young as, you know, Adeline, you know, we were out at a church family picnic, and, you know, all of us don't like olives except my second oldest, Ethan. And so Adeline says, you know, it's so good that Ethan is on our team. He is the one who can eat olives for all the rest of us. What would we do if we didn't have Ethan on our team?
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, so it's you just think of those little things that, you know, your kids say, and they pick up on the language. And so if we can build this team, you know, we've got the space, we've got the opportunity, and you know, my hope and mission is just that continues to expand.
Man, that's awesome. And I think when you see your kids start using that language, you know, something really awesome is happening. Like, they really are getting it. It's their identity shifting, their viewpoint is shifting, and it could take a lot of intentional training, effort, you using the language over and over again, you emphasizing it, them experiencing it, them enjoying it, them seeing the benefits. And then once those start to happen, you get through a few of those cycles where you say it, they experience it, they love it, they start to use it, the language, and then you're not the only one reinforcing this identity. It's like, no, we are a team. And man, when your kids are older and they're expanding the family vision, it's like they know they've got such a powerful team in their corner for whatever God calls them to do. And man, what a beautiful story that is for the world to see what a family team looks like. So that's awesome. Well, this is awesome stuff. Yeah, I'm really, really excited for what you guys are doing. And it's really fun getting to know you. And are you guys coming out? I can't remember. Or hopefully we get a chance to see you guys at some point.
Yeah, we are. We're headed out for Family Teams Weekend again. So we'll be out there in Cincinnati. We're pumped for it. And this has been great. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. And yeah, my encouragement to everyone is that as you're building that family team, you know, the earlier you start with that, with your kids, I mean, it's just, it's the fruit is there. It's such a rewarding opportunity, and hope to see maybe some of you at the conference, or in another way.
Yes. So if you guys are coming to the conference, look up Seth and Christine. They'll be there. Super excited for what you guys are sharing. And this is really encouraging just to hear your journey and the stage you guys are in and some of the fruit you guys are already seeing. So praise God for that. And we'll see you guys soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.